it is about basketball at the end of the day, but you're showing them that there's more care to it than just how are you going to produce on the floor. And that's how you build a better relationship with the parents.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by Ryan Devlin, a 19-year veteran assistant coach most recently at the University of San Diego. Coach Devlin has built his career through stops at Montrose Christian, the College of Southern Idaho, Penn State, Siena, George Washington, and San Diego, along with a short stint as an interim head coach early in his career. His experience across multiple levels has given him a strong perspective on growth and longevity in the profession. In this episode, we discuss the habits and skills he developed that helped him grow in the industry, the best ways to build trust within a coaching staff, and what he's doing now to best position himself for his next opportunity.
Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
Welcome back, coaches. Thank you all for tuning into another episode of the Rising Coaches podcasts. Your hosts, as always, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. We're graced to be able to sit alongside, talk with someone who's been in the industry for some time, 19-year veteran assistant coach, and recently with San Diego University. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Ryan Devlin.
Dev, welcome, brother. Yeah, good to see you, man. Good to be seen.
This is the first one I've done, so if I feel a little awkward or off. My apologies to you guys and everyone else, but instead of doing it like this, I'd see Coach Major I'd lean over my left shoulder and just spit an ID at him or say,
"What's
up?"
Had a great 6 months with you, man. It was a lot of fun.
We're excited to be able to get you on because not only have you had a lot of experiences, a lot of success in so far in your young career, but then also going into now, which we won't talk on right this second. But even being out of the industry, I hate to say it that way, but at the same point, that's something that you mentioned before we even hop on. People are going to hit it at some point. It's a part of the profession, and it's something to at least maybe give some people a little enlightenment as to what you're doing, how you're trying to get back into it, and how you will get back into it, and so on and so forth. But highlighting the career is always one thing we absolutely love to do. You worked your way up through some of the most detail-oriented positions in a program, the video, the ops, obviously coaching. All those roles, I'm sure, have shaped how you see things now, but on a day-to-day basis, like those early years, what do those behind the scenes roles teach you about being a coach that maybe people don't realize? Because I feel like everyone sees those roles and they're not like, oh, they're not glamorous. They're not able to put on social media and sound like, oh, this is amazing. But what did those early years behind the scenes really teach you about the profession?
One is this, they're humbling. I went because I was going from high school, a powerhouse high school, to a powerhouse junior college. And then my first time I ever cracked Division I, I think it was 30 or 31 years old when I was a video coordinator. So I went from coaching guys from first round draft picks and coaching guys at a national championship to, hey, now you're just like cutting up film and making a highlight reel. It's humbling. But right. I'll tell you this. It's like coach, when I was just with my previous coach, I just was adding tools to my tool belt this whole past 19 years that I didn't even realize I was doing. And when I ever get to the chance, I made myself more valuable later in my career by doing those positions. So when you know how to do all that stuff, and then also too, not just because you're the video coordinator, you're also tasked maybe with doing travel and things like that, admissions process, you're the conduit to the compliance office and all that. So everywhere I've went from that point on forward, even when I was at Southern Idaho as a junior college coach, I was the academic advisor for seven of the guys. So it's like when I was up to then when I got to here, like just 20 years later, everything I just did at my past job, I did all the admissions, I did all the onboarding, I did all the international stuff, I did all compliance, I did everything. So it was. A lot of stuff was thrown on my plate, but I knew how to handle it. But it also makes you valuable, just like you're not a one-trick pony. A lot of times people don't want to do those jobs early on in their life because, man, I'm not on the court. Man, I'm not on the road. I'm not watching Nike or Under Armour or whatever circuit shoe you're at, and you're not on the floor passing and all that. I'll be honest with you. Yeah, there were days I bit my tongue for about 4 years doing that stuff. But I'll tell you what, it's made me now, whatever head coach I go into, I can literally say I can be our point person. I can take that off your plate. I can take that off your plate. I can take that off your plate. I just have to, you just have to learn how that school operates and how they go about it. I don't look at it as a, I look at it as a good thing, because there's going to be years when you're an assistant coach and you're just crushing it. You're kicking ass on the trail, recruiting, you're landing guys and all that. But then there's going to, but everything in life's cyclical. There's going to be years that you're going to strike out. You're right there. You got into the final two with this kid, or the kid just decided to go somewhere else, but you still provide value to the program and to your head coach if you know how to do all these other things that still make, that's still just as functional and operational to keep a program running.
Yeah. No, I love you said that, man. I think sometimes in our profession, guys focus on the stuff that's glorious as opposed to the stuff that's not, that's more gritty, and they'd rather be pretty versus gritty in a way. And sometimes gritty is doing the stuff that's behind the scenes, or it's not sexy to post that you're doing travel. That's next to the post that you're doing, whatever it is. I'm glad you said that, because that's, if there's one cheat code in this profession, it is how do you add value and how do you help your head coach's life get one step easier. And I think the more times guys take glory in the stuff that doesn't bring them glory directly, now they're on their way, right? Because when it comes time for you to actually be front and center, whatever that looks like, you'll be ready to meet the moment, because you took pride in doing those little things the right way.
Too, like when you're an assistant coach and you know how to do all those processes, as I say, compliance and admissions and stuff like that, I'm not passing the buck along. Like, I can literally, that kid, that agent, that family from beginning to end. I don't have to go, now it's time, my part's done, I got you to commit, bro, I can pat myself on the back, now it's off to Dak, like, now it's off to Alan Major to do this part, and it's off to this guy. No, I can actually take the kid from point A to point Z the whole way through the process. Really, that builds a big level of trust with the family, because you're not just talking hoop. How many minutes? You're actually talking like, hey, here's where we're going to put you up in your house. Here's how we're going to feed you. Here's how you set up your bank account. Here's how you do all this. Like, you're actually caring more to them. It is about basketball at the end of the day, but you're showing them that there's more care to it than just how are you going to produce on the floor. And that's how you build a better relationship with the parents.
Yeah.
100%. I like that a lot, especially because when you're working with a kid, you got to send them, exactly to your point, you got to send them to, what, five different people. Hey, go talk to this person for admissions, this person for financial aid, this person for housing. And they're like, oh, okay, I've got to talk to five different people. When, to your point, it's a one-stop shop. Let me help you with everything. You really build that relationship. So that's a great point. And it definitely, as you like how you said, it helps you along the way. Because all those skills that you have gotten eventually and obviously have helped you out along the way. But what would you say, what kind of skills or habits have you developed throughout that process, throughout the Dobo, throughout the video coordinator, all of these roles that led you up to the assistant positions? What skills would you say, or habits would you say, that you mainly really helped develop or developed to be able to be where you are now?
Organized is number one.
That's a tough one for people.
Yeah, because you're dealing with so many different constituents. Not only just the clientele, which is the clientele, which I'd say the student athlete, but the constituencies of, I'm talking from admissions to everyone else. Like, you have to have, so like for every time, every year, I can pull up my laptop. Like, I have Excel spreadsheets or Excel docs where I'm just literally, it's like a punch. I put their name in and it's just a punch list up. So I know I'm not skipping a beat. Once I know that school's modus operandi of getting the kid in, like, I'll just literally play the whole, like, it'd be Alan Major, his NCAA ID, then everything that the school, our school needs and requires. Like, I just literally have that, and it's like, it's just a check. So then when someone asks me if we're in a meeting, which you have regularly, probably you go in staff meetings, especially this time of year, because it's so expedited, where you can just pull up on an Excel spreadsheet for your boss, but hey, where are we at? And you can literally just, boom, here we are. All I need, coach, all we're missing is the transcripts. All we're missing is his sickle cell. All we're missing is his $150 deposit check that needs to go to housing that he's going to get back, but he has to submit anyways. Like, it's You just have all that stuff and just a workflow. And once you learn that school's workflow, then you make yourself look genius, but you're not, because a lot of people don't understand it. But it's make it real simple. Then So if Alan gets on the phone with the kid and his recruit, then he can literally just say, "Hey," after the meeting, he can say, "Look, we just met. I know this. You still need to get this in, man. Like, you need to get certified academically by the NCAA. You need to do this." So it just streamlines everything.
No, I love that, man. We talked about this a little bit. Who/when did you first think about coaching? Because obviously we've talked about your family background. You've had some athletes in your family and some high level guys, actually. And so when did it start for you, though? As far as I know, you had background in baseball and you probably thought you're headed to the bigs like every other guy at some point. But when did the coaching thing, like the bug, like hit you and you're like, it hit you?
This is crazy. Now this is going to be a 6 degrees from you. I was working at a detention center right outside of Baltimore, or it was like a reform school, and it was called Bolingbrook Prep. And this was the house that I ran with two individuals ran the house. I ran, and so there was a front shift and a back shift. I ran the back shift. That was Sunday to Wednesday. I ran the front shift Sunday to Wednesday. Mike Pagese
ran it.
No way. He ran the house from Wednesday to Saturday. Geese, it was called 5A at Bolingbrook Prep, right? It was basically in between Baltimore and Frederick, Maryland. He got done playing, and then we were able to work that house together. I worked the front end. He worked the back end. And then, like, when we'd meet, we'd practice the guys together and have a little team. We would go down to the Baltimore Catholic League and play teams like that, or just Baltimore County teams or Baltimore City teams and play them. And then from there, our supervisor was Matt Meeking. He was a big 7-footer that played at Mount St. Mary's and coached there as well. He's a big guy. Now he's a principal, but that was a guy that got me like, oh, this coaching thing's kind of fun. And then I knew I wasn't going to be at that school forever, because that kind of does burn you out at a young age. So then that just got me the bug, and then off I went from there.
Wow. Did somebody else encourage you to kind of, like, when you first know you want to do it, but then it's okay, how do I build some traction, right? Like early on. I'm sure probably Stu, Coach Vetter, was probably a mentor on the way.
I don't want to get in like my bio, but it's like from there, I actually went into Hagerstown Community College and coached. And then I actually met a gentleman by the name of Terry Truax. He passed now, but Terry Truax was a longtime Division I head coach and worked for Dean Smith. And then he saw me when I was really young, and he's like, "Look, man, I know it's high school, but you might want to get away from the junior college route and just get exposed to more higher level players." And he introduced me to Stu Vetter. And then from then, I'll be honest with you, then starting with Stu Vetter, my career just hence blew up, because I was around 3 to 4 NBA first round draft picks every 1 or 2 years. Mm-hmm.
That's nice. You get to work with them. I'm sure it taught you a lot of experiences, being able to work with like guys at that level too, and then seeing them grow. And I know you were even interim too, early in your career, Hagerstown, right?
Yeah.
You got the head title early on.
That was fun. So baptism by fire, I had absolutely no clue in hell what the hell I was doing. But I know this, I had a plan, and I just realized this. What I would do as a teacher, just have a practice plan and do it, and then hold the boys accountable. Like, what I was doing then might have been very elementary, because I was just so young and I wasn't detailed with it. And I didn't have the staff to support me, but I had a plan. I stuck to it. If I didn't like it, I would take notes about it. And then I would hold the boys accountable. I was like, I would say this, like working at the detention center really helped me a lot in order to confront, believe it or not, because when you just see at those schools, when you see a bad behavior, you got to say, no, stop, don't do that. Nah, it's not going to work. So that helps you in coaching. Sometimes when you're young and maybe something the player's not doing, and you're a young coach and you feel you don't have a voice for it, and you still want to support what the head coach wants, you won't say anything. You'll see it right in front of your face, but you're just afraid to, how do I go about it? You don't want to piss the player off or X, Y, Z. Like, to me, I didn't care. No, you did it wrong. Do it again. I think that's some of the best things I ever learned early on, is to be able to just say, no, wrong, do it again. because the guys know that you care about them. Holding them accountable to a certain standard, whether it's an elementary standard or you're breaking down crazy defense or offense.
Now, I think the thing that I enjoyed being around you this year, man, like I can tell you've been around some really good teachers, and obviously starting with Coach Vetter. And for those, probably could be some young guys listening to this, who the hell is this Coach Vetter they're talking about? He's one of the best high school, or I guess prep school, high school prep school coaches in our game's history, at Montrose Christian. For God, how many years was he there? Probably
for 40 plus years.
Yeah. But I think it's clear that you were around some teachers coming up, you know, some guys that taught you how to stack things and teach things and put things in a progressive, you know, in a progression in terms of how you put it together. And that's, you know, we had, I know we had our challenges this year at San Diego, but it was fun for me to work with you because I always knew if we shared something and if you took a segment for 5 minutes, you know, I could go get the heck out of the way and you were, you know, you could break it down and made sense to the guys. And you had a really good ABC 1-2-3 approach, you know, with your teaching and your flow. So would you agree that like some of those guys early on really helped you from a teaching perspective? Because a lot of times in our game now, guys will coach and maybe cheerlead some, but they're not particularly great teachers.
Like early on, yeah, having those guys, because when you start off at the younger route, like you have to be more than a cheerleader. Like some of these younger guys I see today is that they're in a support staff role. So honestly, that's their job. So I get why they're like that. Like when I'm an assistant at a high school and I'm assistant at a junior college, I got to be a coach. Like I had to be a coach. There's when I was in the Big Ten or E10 or the WCC, like we have our coaches, and then you have enough of the other support staff during the game. They're doing their thing, but also too, like they're there to support and cheer and bring great morale. So early on, I was able to voice. And I think what would happen with me is sometimes, I'll never forget, we're in an alum classic in Hawaii. This has been 2009. This is a powerhouse game. The whole first team of that in this high school tournament, we lost the championship game in triple overtime to Oak Hill. But the whole first team was all NBA first round draft picks of the tournament. And I'll never forget, we had a center named Muftal Yaru, who was the 10th best player in the country, went to Villanova. And then he was getting nervous. About a 4-minute segment where DeMarcus Cousins was kicking his ass on the glass. And of course, I'm just getting real direct and hard on him. Naturally, it's a competitive game. I'm young. I'm a whippersnapper and all that. And we break the huddle and back to the bench. He says to me, he said, look, he's trying his best. He says, I can replace assistants, but he goes, I can't replace McDonald's All-Americans. So I learned really fast, like, when to use – get on guys real hard, or when just cheer him up because he's giving the best effort, just not working at the time. And that one always stuck with me. We're sitting in Hawaii and he says that to me. He's look, get rid of you, but he's if you can go find another McDonald's All-American, he goes, that's not going to happen. That's just, it's things like that. Yeah, having guys like that, he really put me in my spot fast. He taught me how to work. He taught me how to have a plan, stick with it, work. Honestly, just work. Because when you're with Coach Vetter, one of the things you're always good at was just player development. At that age, it's great to teach a kid schemes and how things like that. But at the end of the day, our job is just to make them be good men, and then also to just make them be a very skilled basketball player. And then when they get to guys like you, say when I was at Montrose and you're at UNC, they can just be ready to play. They're skilled enough and ready to play. A lot of times in high school, I think if you're getting too analytical and you're getting too – there's a time and place, yes, for everything in life, but – I think at the end of the day, your job when I was at the high school level is just develop the players so they have big time confidence.
Yeah.
Big confidence to play the game.
I like that. The growth of growing the high school guys. And I feel like a lot of people that listen are high school coaches too. So it's good to be able to hear the development side. But what would you say? Now, granted, you were working with All-Americans. You were working with guys who were absolute top of the line. And not everybody gets an opportunity for that. But I think that's great advice for high school coaches. What type of things would you say you look to develop with those high school kids to prep them, whether on the court, I guess, personality-wise, too? You mean, like you said, you want to have them be good people. You want to make sure they're aligned or follow the right morals. Excuse me, but what were some of the things that maybe you tried to help develop or instill into those guys, and in what ways would you instill those?
All of it. So what was really cool at Montrose, I was a teacher there, too. So I was in the classroom, and I had conducted the study hall. So basically, at the end of the day, it's just a good old Roy Williams says on Instagram, you got to sweat. That's what I did with them. Young guys like that, and it doesn't matter today's young guy or the young guy I coached 15 years ago. Everyone's attention span sucks at the age of 14 to 18. It sucks.
It was the 6 seconds. It's the 6 second social media reason. I saw that, and honestly, it sits with me so much.
So it's just, honestly, the biggest thing I would say to this is, because the guys, you said this, though. Yes, I'm not stupid. I'm not dumb. I'm not naive that I was working with the caliber kids I was working with. But when I did stuff with them, it was the most boring, mundane shit you'd ever do. Catch and shoot threes. Because these guys are going to go play at Duke, at Kansas, at Virginia, at Texas, at Baylor. Brother, if you can't make catch and shoot threes, you're not playing, man. Right. We're going to rep out catch and shoot threes. We're not going to work on all. You can do all that other fun stuff with another dude, but with you're with me, it's going to be straight line drives with a bump and a finish, catch and shoot threes. Just as boring as Kobe, they would say Kobe Bryant, just get great at boring. The people that are like pitchers in baseball, they don't start, they do the same shit every day, same routine, and that's why they are where they are. They don't just start in the middle, oh, let's just mess around with it. No, it's the same thing every day. They have a routine every time they do a bullpen, a game day routine, the next day routine. A routine is everything, and just showing them guys what a routine is. And it's honestly the most boring stuff you're ever going to do. But just, or can you do that thousands upon thousands of times where it's just sleep?
Yeah. No, I love that you said that. I had a quote on my board this year that said, reps removed out.
Yeah.
And that's and I think the best lesson I hope that young coaches take from what you just said is don't be, especially now when you can just go acquire talent. We didn't like this year's team or these three guys. Let's just go get somebody else. There's still a place and it's still an importance for developing talent, not just acquiring talent. Because right. You can acquire talent now. Now, if you have the money for it, if you don't, if your program doesn't have the finances, then you better get really good at developing talent. And that you may have the guys move on because they play their way out of your situation. But the bottom line is, I think the teams that both have talent and develop that talent are the ones that play deep into their seasons. But I think just getting talent right now, it's almost a crutch anymore because guys aren't maybe as focused on development as they could be or should be.
No, you're right. At the end of the day, you can draw up the greatest play in the world, but if that kid can't hit that shot at 40%, you're screwed.
Yeah, no question.
You better work on just that driving kick shot, bam. Because state of flow of basketball, offensively, what is it, NBA? Basketball state of flow, the game's played at 35 to 38% of the game offensively is played in the state of flow or something like that. Some crazy number. So you better just be able to just catch and shoot, one dribble drive. You got to be able to do that.
Huh.
Do that, you're screwed.
Yeah, the ability to play off each other. Yeah. No,
I never even heard of the state of flow side of things. That's interesting. But I did see something recently. Now, I don't know how true this is. This was on social media, so take it with a grain of salt. But I saw something that said if somebody's shooting 80% from the floor when they're in practice completely by themselves, just catch and shoot, working on that, that they typically would shoot 30 to 40% less than in a game. Mm-hmm. So whatever – is that – you think that's pretty accurate?
Oh, yeah. I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that.
Not
sure. Yeah, if you're shooting 80% in practice, just spot up, you're probably going to be shooting, 40%, maybe less than, which is phenomenal. But
yeah, that's great. You're gonna have a long career doing that.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
Wherever your career is, you're gonna be a superstar in that role of your career you're at.
100%. No, because it drops because other things factor in, right? Fatigue factors in. You're on the move sometimes, that factors in. The hand in your face factors in.
The crowd. the atmosphere, yeah, the depth perception.
So everything kind of, all those things factors in to bring that. Oh, yeah. But there is a cutoff point where if you're good, and that's whether it's 38% or 42 or whatever it is, but there's a cutoff point with all the distractions. You factor all those out, and then the work you put in is going to rise to the surface.
Right.
No doubt. Now, I do want to ask at one point, I know we trickled on it a little bit in the beginning, but just kind of going back to it, forwarding now where you guys are at, talking about, obviously it was an unfortunate situation not be able to stay, be retained with San Diego. But the thing I want to ask is more because, not to highlight it, but more to just give clarity, is this is what happens in the coaching profession. Sometimes you can be in, sometimes you can be out of a position. What are some of the things that maybe you're looking to do at the current moment, trying to get back into it? What are some ways for coaches who go through a situation like this to be able to try and get their ways back into the profession?
Is one, honestly, enjoy some of the time that you do get. I'm married with a wife and two kids, so you have to do that. This is not the first time for me, and it's not the last time. You're so pressed to find the next one that you kind of start with my family. You lose sight of them a little bit because you're trying so hard to do get that. And you can lose them, you know, and no human being wants to do that. So I would say just enjoy it. When you get it, then you go to work. But until then, you think right now, you're trying to do all this stuff, but they're like, you're working for what now? There's not, it's hard. Yes, I understand you have to work for free to get to where you want to go. I know all that stuff. But it's like sometimes you rev your engines up and you get your anxiety and your nerves up so much. But then you go to bed at night and you're like, all right, for what? I know you're doing it to be prepared, and I get all that, but it's just trying the old saying, be where your feet are, be present. It's going to happen. But I would just say that enjoy the time that you have.
Yeah.
Because you don't, once you get back into it again, it's over again. You lose that little window of time. This is for people that have loved ones.
Yeah.
Because I've seen people lose their loved ones during that time. What else would I say? Find a routine. You got to keep a routine. It's very easy to just, I don't know, go try to keep your same routine. Get up when you get up. You normally do when you go to work. Find things maybe that you did. If you're not, you know, you still can call and recruit. You can still talk to kids. You can still do all that. Just say you're relevant to them. Like for me, and like Alan knows this, I do my walks. Like when I'm done with this, I'm going to go do my walk. I do my walk every day. It's between 3 to 4 miles every day. So, like, I just keep that. I don't lose sight of that. And then when I come back, my kids get off school, and then I try to get with them. Because I know here at some point, I'm going to have a job, and I won't be able to do that. If I'm trying to sign, like, right now, if you're trying to sign a team, you're trying to do it, it's not like I'm realizing you're not all happening in a day. Like, when you get there, that's when it'll happen. It's not going to happen until you sign a contract, until you're actually, your butt's on that campus, and you're there, and you're all that. So, just try to be prepared. But enjoy the time that you have. But that doesn't mean you're lazy or you're on the grind and you're not like going to war to battle and you're no. But it's, you can still be ready for it. But I've done it now. It just, you can, during this window of time, if you have loved ones in your house, you can neglect them because you become so self-centered on what you're trying to achieve that you really push away the people that want to see you succeed the most.
Man,
no. That's great advice. Nah, you know what? I always say whenever you have a crash, you got to be ready and have people that can help ease the landing.
Oh, you know, hell yeah.
I like it. They help keep you grounded. And I'm with you, man. I think that's the best thing you can do is, number one, embrace your loved ones. And then number two, again, find a routine. Be digging to your network. But find something that keeps you on a consistent daily basis of something. But then find a way to be a better coach. Find those little pockets where you can to work on your craft, whatever that looks like, whether you study a FIBA team or a pro team. Or I had somebody just send me some stuff on OKC recently that I was reading up about. And I'm going to try to do a little study on the Miami Heat here because they kind of changed their offense and doing some unique things that are almost like motion related, old school as that may sound. But and again, not having kids, I'm in a little different space, but like with you, Dev, it's, you nailed it, right? Like there's time, as they get older, there's time, you're still a cool dad now, Like, you want to remain being the cool dad as long as you can. Because right. at some point, they'll walk in the house and be like, yo, this kind of, oh, hey, dad, what's up? All right. Good to see you. And then they'll kind of keep it moving. Their face will be in their phone, and that'll be that. But
right.
yeah, you're still the cool dad now. So having that time and maximizing that time that you can't get back is a big deal. So I love that you said that, man.
And keeping a consistent routine, too, I think is something that's helpful. If you don't have the typical 9 to 5, even allotting certain hours of your day to, this is when I'm going to get work done, refining your resume always helps, I'm sure. And then updating it with most relevant things, like things that you've done, the successes that you've had. But I feel like having that up to date is always good, because whether you're in a position or not, you never know when somebody's going to come knocking on your door. Hey, I got another position for you. And if you don't have your stuff updated, now you got to scramble, get everything updated. So I feel like it's always good to be able to keep that updated as well.
Agreed.
What we'll do is we will get to our final segment, final portion, really just a hot seat segment. Put the burners on, make the seat a little warm. All it is just like a question or two to...
It's like, damn, Deb, we just went through that. You going to hit us again? Like,
you don't have to know everybody. I say network, find your circle, and then your circle will grow from that circle. Like, sometimes you just start just like reaching and you're trying to find all these like way, and you're just going to get crickets. But once you know your circle, hone in on that circle. And then naturally, as you, it's just like anything in life, it's like fishing. The more you just keep throwing that reel out with that circle, something's going to catch. It's going to grow naturally.
No, that's great advice, man. We just saw a lot of that in Indy. A little bit of a peacock deal going on as far as just, but you're saying there's something to be said for being yourself, though, because that the people that matter can read if you're being yourself or not. They can see it 100 miles away.
Right. Yeah. It's just, you can see it. Just be yourself. Just 100% be yourself. That's the most important thing. And very corny, cliche, but it's the honest truth, especially when you're trying to break in.
That's the thing, too, about this profession. I feel like everybody always says it's cliche to say this, but in reality, it's the truth. It really is. There's no one path or direction to be able to get somewhere. Yeah. So it's, although it may sound corny, it's the truth at the end of the day. And then off of that, too, I guess the final one that we would have would just be, you've been on various staffs, had some great experiences, as we mentioned, no matter the role, College of Southern Idaho, Penn State, Siena, George Washington, San Diego. And obviously there's more, high school and so on, but the different places that you have been with different staffs. Now, I'm sure probably you knew somebody on that staff, maybe not, but regardless, being a new person on a staff, what's the best way as an assistant or whatever role to gain trust out of those other coaches around you?
Hey, I'm here. How can I help?
Simple as that.
I'm here. Not like coaches use the word peacock. No, none of that. Don't name drop. Don't do any of that stuff. Just like the word, humble and hungry. Hey, I'm here. I'm ready to help. That's simple. Yeah,
that's a great point.
No doubt.
Being present.
Yeah. Like whatever that help entails is watching the golf cart down to opening doors for the guests on the visit to organizing travel stuff, or you're the rebounder that day. Just, hey, I'm here. I'm ready to help. What do you need?
I've learned that so much. Always ask questions, but the number one thing is, how can I help? Those couple words, and I'm glad you just brought that up. Those couple words, I really think, are so huge, because I've made it a point to ask my head coach every day, how can I help? What can I do? And he actually got to a point, he goes, you don't have to ask me every day, but it's you keep asking. I think it's great. And I've learned that through here. So I'm not even going to self-proclaim and say I did that myself. I learned that through the podcast, but that's great advice.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's life. It's all facets of life.
Yeah. How can I? No. Yeah, no, those four words travel. You better ask your wife that every now and then, or you get knocked upside the head.
I had to paint some closet doors yesterday.
So you're not going to be asking that one for a minute.
So,
Well, Dave, listen, man, as Dougie gets ready to land the plane here, number one, I can't wait to see what you end up with next. I know it won't be long. Secondly, and most importantly, it's been an honor just to develop a relationship with you and become a friend. You know, obviously we had our ups and downs this year, but just day to day, it was a blast you know, working with you, man. And, you know, just again, and been an honor to know you. So I know we'll be staying in touch. And like I said, can't wait to see what happens with you next. But as far as this goes, like, you dropped some stuff today that our profession needs to hear and can't ever hear enough. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, because I knew you would say some things that are going to make not just coaches better, but make our profession better. And so I appreciate it, brother. Appreciate you.
No, I appreciate it. I love you, Coach.
Yeah, love you back, brother. Yeah.
You got it.
I appreciate you for being on here. It really helps everybody, right? Learning in different ways, yep, and different people. So thank you very much for being on here. Hopefully you finished all your paintings and then you can get to relax. And other than that, all of you tuning in, thank you all for listening to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your hosts, Alan Major and Doug Caputo. Coaches, as we always say, keep working, keep rising. Talk to you all soon. Take care.
Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine. Any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get an extra $250 off the Dr. Dish commercial lineup when you mention Rising Coaches.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.